With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
But the big news was that James Wiseman, Friday, was we learned that he was the NCAA was had declared him ineligible, and then they the person who sits across from me, Randy Fishman, was in court getting a temporary restraining order and got the temporary restraining order, and so James Wiseman played, and so now why waste any time? Let's go to Mr. Fishman. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
So when did you all get this case?
Well, I got wind of it on Wednesday evening.
Wednesday? Nothing before then. You'd been minding your own business, doing what you do at the with Leslie, doing, you do mostly civil plaintiff's work, right?
Is that
right?
That's correct.
And then he does the criminal side.
He does.
And you got this Wednesday.
I did. And Leslie and I, along with Blake.
That's Blake Bowen, his son.
Leslie's son. Mm-hmm. And some others in the office, we put together our complaint seeking a declaratory judgment on behalf of James. And Thursday was an interesting day.
Had he been declared, when was he? Cause it's funny because Friday the NCAA, in response to all this, put out a statement saying that they had determined, had told the university that James would be likely ineligible. Had they told you that he would be likely ineligible or that he would be ineligible or?
Jeff, I have to say that I don't recall saying the word likely.
That they had told you that he was ineligible. And when you say Thursday was an interesting day, why?
Well, you can imagine everything flying around and it's not on the radar yet. And
certainly was not on the radar yet.
And, you know, recognizing this was going to have not only local but national impact. There was a great deal of thought that went into the drafting of the complaint for various legal reasons that I won't bore your listeners with. But
we'll bore them with them in just a minute, but go ahead. Some of them, yeah.
And so that all took place, and then speaking with different folks at the university, speaking with Mr. Wiseman, Coach Hardaway, and I didn't speak directly with Dr. Rudd, but others did, and so it was a little bit of a whirlwind.
So you filed on Friday, and my understanding is, first, who was in the, were James and Penny there in the court?
Both Wiseman and Coach Hardaway were in court along with the university counsel, Melanie Murray, terrific lawyer, nice lady. There was actually a hearing going on. You know how the process works when you file a temporary restraining order. You sort of bust into the courtroom and bang, bang. Hey, Judge.
Judge, we have
I got something you got to do. And so,
you come barging into the hearing like Superman there. Yeah. Stop the presses, right?
Exactly. And the chancellor, in due time, got to us and handled it very professionally. And there was a record made, and he made his decisions touching on the elements of what is required in order to make the findings he had to make in order to grant a temporary restraining order, and we got it done. And
now, what is the restraining order? I was reading it again this morning. It restrains the NCAA from declaring him ineligible. Isn't that right? It doesn't. Did it force? Did they have to play him? In other words, did the University of Memphis, because they're a defendant, at least you call it, they're a defendant here, did they have to play him, or did they just they couldn't rule him ineligible?
Well, that's, you know, as you know, that's a coach's decision.
Right.
We can't tell Coach Hardaway who to play and who not to play, and so that's his decision. If I were a coach, I'd like to play him.
You'd like that 7-foot guy there.
Yeah.
So, but basically, it restrained the NCAA from declaring him ineligible.
Well, what it did is restrained both the university and the NCAA from acting on any of this alleged conduct, and the status quo would remain in place.
Right.
And if Coach Hardaway was going to play him, not play him, or whatever you know, he had in his trick bag, that was up to him.
And it's clear to you that James, obviously, James is your client, right? James is your client. The University of Memphis is separately represented?
They are.
Okay. And it's clear to you that James, the University, Memphis, all are in agreement that they want him to play and don't want him to sit out.
Sure, our interests are aligned.
Right. Just to the extent you can, why do you think you're on the right side of this? Is there an injustice being done here, and why?
Several things bother me, Jeff. I am concerned that the NCAA would make a finding and rule him eligible, and that was not an off-the-cuff, hey, you're eligible. That was after some.
This was back in May when they initially ruled him eligible.
There was some study done. All the facts were laid out, and they made their decision. And then shortly thereafter, they came back and said they had made an error. But that pursuant to their error policy, they would stand by their decision.
They represented that they had made – I want to break those things down. Mm-hmm. In May, because I've had various people – everyone's writing about this, of course, all over the country. So various people are saying they simply – if the information was out there that $11,500 in moving expenses had been given from Penny to James, that they wouldn't have ruled eligible.
It wasn't given
from James's mother. I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. That they wouldn't have ruled him ineligible. They can't have known that. I've heard people say they can't have known that. But you're saying in May when they made their initial decision, all the relevant facts were known?
That's correct.
And then they came back. And they said they made a mistake, but then they specifically represented that they were going to stand by it because they made a mistake?
They have an error policy that they're going to stand by their mistake. Now, I don't know from what I read.
Right.
I hadn't had a chance to depose anybody.
Right.
But from what I read, I don't know if that means we stand by it forever.
Right.
Or we stand by it for a week, or exactly what it means. And that type of, quote, indefiniteness, and what a key word that is in this lawsuit. Is what
it's fairly staggering that they could say that and then come and turn around, which is it's actually does remind you a little bit of the Derrick Rose thing where they declared him eligible to play and then subsequently, with the university never even knowing about it, never having known he was ineligible, stripped the whole thing away. And obviously, that's not relevant to this, but it does suggest how they operate a little bit.
But you know, in James's case, you know, in May, he could have gone somewhere else,
right.
And you're familiar with the term detrimental reliance.
Right.
And he's told he's eligible. And the rest is history.
So you have one of the theories of your case is called something called promissory estoppel, which that's the kind of thing we don't want to bore. But it basically means you having said this and told James this and him having done things to rely on it, you are now not in a position where you can go back and change your mind.
And that theory is in our lawsuit. But, the term that really bothers me is when the NCAA says that in 2008, when Coach Hardaway gave $1 million to the university to build a Sports Hall of Fame, he became a booster, friend of the school, friend of the university. And thus it is that which, when you turn the clock up to 2017, when he gave Wiseman's mother $11,500 to move, that him being a booster is what the problem is.
Right.
And the language is that you're a booster indefinitely. And the chancellor was somewhat concerned about that terminology, and I think that's a big, big issue, is you're going to tell me that I'm a booster indefinitely is certainly arbitrary as to when I won't be a booster.
Right. The point you made in the lawsuit was that indefinite shouldn't be mean in perpetuity. Indefinitely is one. It does not mean in perpetuity. And what they hear is saying, now just to play devil's advocate, a lot of what you're saying, it seems to me, when I read it again, was that the decisions they made were not consistent with their own policies, arbitrary and capricious, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What they will probably argue is, aren't we best in the position? It's a voluntary organization. You're subjected to the policies. Who better to interpret our own policies than us? Why should a court be involved in interpreting our own policies? We'll tell you what our policies mean. That's an argument they might make.
Well, they have to be ascertainable. You have to be able to
read them
read them and make a decision. I can't voluntarily be a member of your club, and you're going to tell me what the rules are after I violate one. That's
right.
That's not reasonable.
Right. Now, one of the things that is really staggering is when James made the decision to file this lawsuit, he didn't, like, they can't tell you how long he would have had to sit out, if he was going to sit out, you all do lots of criminal cases, obviously, at the Ballin Law Firm. Mm-hmm. This is very different. At the time that James is making a decision as to what to do, he has no idea what the penalty might be. Is that right?
Absolutely correct. I cite the example. You could represent a criminal defendant on a murder one case, and you're going to get an opportunity to know what he's facing before he makes a decision whether to go to plead. Trial or
he's going to say, we'll give you 15 years or 20 years, possibility early parole, blah, blah. Here it is. Take it or leave it.
Right.
What's the NCAA say?
NCAA says, you go ahead and you plead guilty, and then we'll tell you what we're going to do.
It's staggering.
I mean, just that concept in and of itself is so un-American and so outside the step of the norm, that ought to be up against public policy. For you to have to submit to some alleged violation and not know what your penalty is.
It's unbelievable. Like, so he could have sat out. If he had sat out Friday, he said, okay, I did it, whatever. And then they'll let you know if you're ineligible all year or half the year. Or is that something you looked into, by the way? Likely situations, what would have likely happened? But you're just guessing. It's purely guesswork.
I would tell you there was a great deal of discussion about what the potential penalties would be. We talked to more than one person, experts on the subject, as to what the likely penalty might be. But there's no definiteness to any of it. Now, if, for example, somebody might have assured James that he could have sat out one game, I would imagine that would have been something perhaps he would consider.
Right. Pay back the money, sit out one game, whatever else. Right.
That's a given. But you know, when you don't know what you're walking into, it's very difficult to say, okay, you're right, I'm wrong, let's get it over with.
Talking to Randy Fishman, who is James Wiseman's attorney, he was in there Friday actually arguing on behalf of the temporary restraining order while Leslie Ballin was meeting with it was quite a scene Friday.
Well, we only had so many bodies, so Blake and Leslie had to do what they had to do, and I had to do what I had to do. And another lawyer in our office, Richard Townley, was instrumental in drafting the complaint. And
have you been surprised? I mean, this is a huge national story. I suspect you predicted this reaction.
I would say to you that, as you know, Jeff, we've been involved in many high-profile matters.
Right.
This is certainly one of them. And the firestorm with the media was anticipated.
The nice thing is you get to wear the white hat.
Doesn't happen very often. usually people are scoffing at us. How could you get this
awful person off, et cetera? And instead, now you get to be on the side of – and it's interesting – not just in Memphis. Of course people in Memphis would be on your side, but it feels like nationally people are on your side, doesn't it, a little bit?
I think this could be the case that gets enough attention that something would happen with the rules of the NCAA. You know, we have this, the kid at Ohio State, and I know nothing about
Chase
the facts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about the facts. But they sat that kid out, or sitting him out for four games. That's a third of the season, which is pretty much their standard, as I understand it. Well, you take a third of the basketball season, that's, you're talking about 9, 10, 11 games.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about what might happen next. So you now have this temporary restraining order that is in place. The next thing that happens, at least according to is that there is a hearing scheduled on the 18th for a temporary injunction. Is that right?
That's correct.
And what's the... First, might something happen between now and the 18th?
Anything's possible. you know, I've never refused to talk to the other side in any lawsuit I've ever been on. And we would be more than happy to have any conversation with them. But, you know, it's just like any type of negotiation. There's things that you can do and things that you won't do. And so, whether those things can align to make something happen.
There may be conversations with the NCAA between that. You're speculating. Could happen. You would hope so. That's what you would like to happen.
I would love that to happen.
And figure this out and resolve it, and so it doesn't have to go to...
Listen, this is weighing heavy on James personally. This is, I mean, the young man is 18, 19 years old, however old he is. This is, you can imagine the effect this has on him. Coach Hardaway's dealing with everything under the sun. The university is dealing with a lot of things. And, you know, this would be very nice on behalf of the university and the basketball team and Coach Hardaway if we could find a way to wrap this up and it was not, you know, a long, drawn-out affair.
I see. If that does not happen, then there will be a one of the things that people have suggested is that the NCAA might try to get this removed to federal court. Right now, it's a state court proceeding in front of Jim Kyle.
Right.
The next hearing for the temporary restraining for the injunctive relief will be in front of Jim Kyle as well.
Right.
And the NCAA could say this should be in federal court. Right?
They could.
They would file that in state court, but it goes to federal, and a federal judge would make that decision as to whether it should be in federal court or not. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a removal process from state court to federal court. There's also a remand process to move it back from federal court to state court, and those are, you know, those will be bogged down in legal issues as to whether or not there's a federal question or whether or not there's diversity.
Right.
In order to have a federal court jurisdiction, is there, you know, does it meet the criteria to be in
federal court? Just to break that down, I don't want people's eyes to glaze over, but essentially it could go to federal court if there is a federal issue in the actual lawsuit. And right now, as you've pled the lawsuit, there's not. It's all various, right? Isn't it?
It's
a state question.
We drafted it to try to make it a state question.
It's a state, right. Sure. And then separately, diversity means it's not the way you think of it out there. It means that if two different states are – if the people are from two different states, then it can go to federal court. If the plaintiff and the defendant are from different states, then it can go to federal court. But if there's people on both sides from the same state, then it remains in state court. And as pled, James Wiseman's obviously is a Tennessee guy. And one of the defendants is the University of Memphis, who's right. Tennessee. In the lawsuit, call the University of Memphis a nominal defendant.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that suggest they might say, you know what, this should go to federal. University of Memphis isn't really on the other side here.
The truth of the matter is the interests of the university, a nominal defendant means your interests are aligned, basically.
Right.
But there's a process, there's a reason that the university's in there because they're the ones in privity of contract with the NCAA. They're the ones who are governed by them.
Right.
Of course, James is what we call in the legal field a third-party beneficiary.
We're really getting people at illegal education this morning. We're going to charge all of you this. You send your tuition here to 92.9 FM ESPN. Go ahead.
Maybe I get a CLE out of it.
Exactly right.
But in any event, that's the status of it. And but federal courts will look beyond whatever you call people and make their own decision. There's also a requirement that there be a minimum of $75,000 in controversy. This is purely a declaratory judgment.
So there's no money in controversy?
There's no money in controversy.
I see.
And, you know, there's also the question of whether or not the NCAA can be found to be a Tennessee.
Because they have branches everywhere. The NCAA is everywhere.
They're an unincorporated association of universities.
Obviously, you would like it to probably remain in state court. That's why you did it that way. Let me ask you this. If when the 18th is, by the way, could that date be pushed back too? The 18th isn't firm, is it?
Well, it's firm as right now. Chancellor Kyle expects to hear from us then.
I see.
But, you know, if the stars align and the parties came together, they could ask the court to set it out a little farther. Yeah.
I see.
That could happen.
At that point, if you get the injunction at that point, isn't that essentially it? That means James is going to play all year long, right? I mean, by the time you got to, I mean, you mentioned you haven't deposed anyone. At that point, you'd start deposing people. This would not go to trial till the season's over, right? presumably?
I can't imagine it would move any faster than that. I mean, there's, you're going to have a number of lawyers involved, so you got those calendars to deal with. You got holidays to deal with. I just can't imagine that you'd get it done before.
So if you can win on the temporary restraining order, I mean, on the injunction, temporary injunction, you've essentially, at that point, you'd think you'd play all year.
I would think so. But again, that's, you know, that's a byproduct of what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to run the clock out.
Right.
If we could have a hearing on the merits tomorrow, we'd do it.
You believe in the merits.
Yeah, I believe in the merits of the case. I wouldn't have filed it.
As you pointed out, we were talking off the air, this is a weird case. Like, this is not a set of facts that they deal with typically.
I do not believe that the NCAA rules, and that rule book is, as I said, 480 pages, I think. I do not believe that it contemplated a set of facts that we have here and the associated penalties that they may.
The penny giving $1 million back in 2008?
Well, I mean, look at the clock. I mean, you've got, at the time, he gave $1 million 9 years prior to giving $11,500 to Wiseman's mother. Well, at that time, we had just hired Tubby Smith. Who in the world would have thought he was going to last 2 years and out?
Right.
I mean, did anybody see that coming?
No. At the time that he could not have contemplated that. Listen, Penny wanted the job before Tubby got the job, but at the time that he helped James move here, he could not have contemplated that he would be the Memphis coach with James Wiseman. Not for a minute.
He'd have to have a crystal ball and be pretty damn good at it in order to see that.
Know how to read that thing. We look forward to following this, and you're obviously a hero now here in the you and Leslie and Blake, heroes all in Memphis. And as long as, you know, in a sense, you're just like a basketball coach. As long as you don't lose, as long as you just keep winning.
Yeah, you can go from hero to zero pretty quick.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. It's been wonderful of you to stop by, and all of Memphis is on your side of this. So that is Randy Fishman. We are going to come back, and we will talk about it more. I'll talk to Jeffrey about it. I don't want to keep him here giving a legal education forever. We'll let him get to work. But we'll be back in a moment to talk more about this case. Thanks very much. We'll be here back in a sec. 92.9 FM ESPN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.